We're talking to Stan Deo today. It's top of the hour, 9 o'clock. Through these, Johnny B. in Missouri. You're on with Stan Deo. Go ahead, please, Johnny B.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Morning.
I got three real quick things, Stan, if I can borrow some of your intellect here.
Okay, quickly.
Over the last few years, I've noticed a pretty major increase in heat stroke sensitivity, which didn't seem to be quite as bad up until last year. But now I'm lucky to get through an hour or two outside without having to retreat.
Well, you know, Holly works out in her gardens and does mowing and stuff like that, and I've noticed in the last few weeks that when she's been out in the sun, it has really taken its toll on her. She's had to come in and take cold showers just to get, you know, from having heat stroke. I mean, it just, I hadn't seen that before.
Sure. I'm starting to notice it even indoors occasionally, and I was just wondering, you know,
are you air-conditioned or cooled in any way
when
indoors?
When I can. Yeah, it relieves it a little bit.
Well, I think we're going to see some hot temperatures. I mean, really hot and probably muggy in some areas, which if you don't have, like, real air conditioning to dry the air out and not swampers or swamp coolers, then a lot of people indoors are going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, go ahead quickly, Stan.
Something else,
Johnny.
Two other points.
Bird movement. On mornings that I wouldn't have near the problem, I would hear a lot of songbirds singing. But boy, the day that it would start up really bad, all the birds were gone.
Yeah, I don't have hardly any birds. I don't have hardly any birds this
summer. We've noticed that too.
Mm-hmm. And my son saw, he's seven, but he knows his directions, and he said he saw geese flying south. I don't know what that meant. Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means, but.
Yeah, there's nothing
another quick
wrong
thing.
With Earth's magnetic field, and the birds steer by that.
Sure.
Okay.
And one more quick thing, Stan. Did you notice the sinkhole they found on Mars from the orbiter?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that looking an awful lot like a sinkhole?
Yeah, now, I don't remember reading the report on it. Did they say that was a recent development, or it's just something they just recently discovered?
They just stumbled across it from one of the photographs that was taken in the past.
Well, I've been developing a new model for the weaker gravitational force in the solar system. There's planetary and solar gravity, but then there's also an organizing gravitational force. And part of this theory says that planets will periodically, all planets, expand from their original diameter. And as they do, it stretches the surface. Now, you know, on the Earth and on Mars and on the Moon, there's very good photographic evidence that you can put together that shows that all these objects, the planets, the moons that I mentioned, have expanded from a prior state where the continents of Earth all touched together, where portions of the moon's surface all touched together, where Mars had a large section of it all put together, connected, before it expanded. Now on Earth, a lot of these sinkholes have been in areas where water leaked in, that kind of stuff. And they were held together by the compression force of the surface of the Earth.
Let's go back to the phone calls. We've got lots of people that want to talk to you. Stan in Missouri. Stan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Joyce and
Hi.
Stan. My gosh, I've got a comment on the weather. Stan, you know, I just heard on this morning on the radio, they were talking about pretty much what you're talking about. They said they predicted by 2012 we're going to start seeing worldwide food famines and probably riots over this food situation. And, you know, we've been having a lot of rain and flooding over here in Japan and places like that. My advice is, I'm kind of, I guess you call me kind of a survivalist. I've been preparing this for quite a while now. I've been hoarding quite a few canned goods, you know, gallon canned goods. But the thing about hoarding is you better be prepared to guard your food because you can't be around, you can't be at home 24 hours a day.
Right.
You better be prepared to share some of that food with people, too, because I tell you what, now, if this does come down to where we start seeing food shortages, the cities, my best advice, if you're country-minded like me, you better get yourselves out of the city, and you better get yourselves out of the city pretty quick if you got the resources.
Okay, good point. Thank you very much for that. Stan, anything you want to admit, you want to address?
Well, yeah. What he's talking about kind of addresses the issue of you got to sleep sometime. And so if you get out of the cities, which I think is a good idea, and into the rural areas, you better make arrangements with wherever you're going beforehand, even if you don't own the property, so that you can get there without getting in trouble with the owners. But the beauty of that is if you're going out there with other people, you will have someone that can then run a guard duty shift while you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. We've called that building mini communities, like MINI, so that you don't have large amounts of people, but enough to do guard shifts and to stand guard and help you if you get injured or whatever during the process of this. Look, gold and silver will only have, and dollar bills will only have a short life in what comes, because it's going to get so short of, we're going to get so short of food, water, and medicine, and weapons, and that kind of stuff, that gold and silver won't be of value. It's the things that gold and silver can buy that will be of the most value. So that's
right.
Why if you prepare now by getting it, while you can still use dollars to buy these things, then when the crunch comes, you will have the new currency, if you wish, in the form of consumables that people need.
Mm-hmm. And another question here, there's been a lot of talk recently that the jet stream has stopped, caused the heat and humidity, the drought, to stall over the center of the U.S. Aaron wants to know, what are your thoughts of the jet stream stopping due to the Gulf Stream stopping?
Well, the jet stream has been acting very peculiar for a number of years, where it would break up and not be a continuous loop around the northern pole. Recent situation does appear that it is not doing its job, and it's a function of the Earth's magnetic field and the solar wind. So something with the sun may be causing it to break up for a number of reasons, change in the magnetic field and also pressure waves and protons hitting it. And there may be other mitigating factors that we can hope for. But like the Gulf Stream, which stopped, and I'm not sure whether it's even started to restart yet, there have been a number of climatic factors that are behaving anomalously, and the jet stream is one of them. You can see it on some of the, I forget the website, but they show the Gulf Stream as a cloud stream, and they show you when it breaks up. I mean, I've seen it break up and dive down into Texas, but when it breaks up and does this, when we have this tremendous heat, I think we're at risk of losing large sections of it for long periods of time, which cannot be good.
All right, let's go to George in Pennsylvania. George in Pennsylvania, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for a wonderful show, as always. I had noticed recently this summer that the sun seems to be coming up and going down further north in the sky than usual. I have a Polaris north-facing house, and we have sun on the north side of the house in the morning and the evening. The shadow seems to be a little bit more toward the north than during the day, but the sun does not seem to be coming up and going down in the places that it usually did, and just wondered if you could help address that.
George, you know, that's a very good question. We've been getting reports from Eskimos and people up in the north that are saying that the sun rises in about the normal place for them, but it's set offset. It's not setting correctly. I have a program called Stellarium, which you can download off the Internet into your computer, and it has positions of stars, you know, rise and fall of sun and moon and everything for thousands of years, I guess, if you want to go that far. Now, I download it, and when I want to test it, I be sure that the Internet is off, because I don't want anybody feeding my Stellarium, you know, revised data to say the sun is really setting where it should. So I've been looking at this, and I have not been able to catch it deviating a lot from where I am here in Colorado, but it might be that because my horizon has got a lot of buildings and trees that I'm not measuring it correctly. But I am looking at it because I am getting so many reports of this, even from Indonesia and from Japan, that there must be something. I mean, and reports are coming from gardeners, just normal people saying, well, all my life the sun has set blah, 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 made shadows on my garden wall like such and such, and it's not doing it now. So
all right, we'll be back.
Something to that.
Okay, we got a four-minute break. Let's go to, and you're saying that underground is really the only answer then, correct, Stan?
I think the Bible's right about that.
The question I have regarding the EMP possibility, and tying what the lady just said with the radiant beard, could you effectively turn your house into a Faraday cage if you had a radiant barrier in your attic, and then if you created a curtain that could roll down inside your house on the, you know, if your house is finished, create a curtain on your wall that you could lower that would have this radiant barrier? Would this encapsulation of aluminum foil act as a Faraday cage and protect your whole house from an EMP?
No, I don't think so, because to properly shield, you need to have a total seamless metal encapsulation around what you're trying to protect, and that needs to be grounded to the earth with a good ground copper rod, something like that, or sometimes water pipe. You're better off if you're trying to protect things from EMP, either from the sun or from nuclear facilities. Try to get a metal trash can, a new one, and put some aluminum foil around the lip of it before you put the lid on, and also get some Mylar bags or aluminum foil and wrap it around whatever you're trying to protect. Put it inside the metal trash can, put the lid on. Be sure that there are no gaps from the aluminum foil and the metal lid. And then attach a ground wire to that to, you know, the water pipes or to a 8-foot ground rod that you just, hammer in at your house. If there's any breaks in it, if there's any crack along where that radiant barrier didn't touch itself, you know, it didn't seal, then the EMP pulse will get through. And one thing I like to mention to people is this. If you know an EMP pulse is coming, well, you'll have your stuff protected, and that's fine. So you get it out after the pulse has passed. You think, wow, I've got working stuff now. My radios work, my computers work, whatever that you put away. And you're caught by surprise when another EMP hits you without warning, and it'll fry them. So they've either got to live in that EMP shelter, that Faraday cage that you make, forever, or you're going to take the risk every time you take it out of either man-made or, you know, a solar EMP frying it. So you might have to think about having backups.
All right. Thank you very much for the phone call. Let's go to John in Missouri. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, John.
Appreciate that. It's been 15 years ago. My ex-wife's great uncle made the comment that the sun had shined in this one kitchen door that had never done it for like 100 years. So I knew then the earth was rotating or the sun was moving a little bit. My question was, and you probably have answered it, when there's a solar flare or EMP or one of these, how long do you have before you can grab your computer, your phone, your electronics, and put them in that Faraday cage?
Well, because the EMP pulse is an electromagnetic wave. Electromagnetic waves are not going to travel any faster than the speed of light, but they travel pretty close to it, right? So when we find out about it, it's too late. From the sun, for instance, it'll be on us in 8 minutes after it happens on the sun, and we won't have a warning. With a nuclear bomb blast, we might get a warning by the civil authorities or the government authorities prior to the bomb going off. But in that case, you might have only a couple minutes because they will typically launch these things from offshore on a naval vessel of some sort and just make an airburst over the northeastern or southwestern part of the United States. You're not going to have very much time to shove your stuff in, and certainly, if it's a solar one, you're having no warning.
Do you think the government would really give us a warning, an 8-minute warning? Do you actually think they would?
As far as the sun, they couldn't. I mean, mm-hmm. By the time the thing's detected, even if you have near-sun satellites detecting the EMP pulse, they'll probably be fried and can't relay the data, and it wouldn't matter anyway because they would launch a report if they survived it back toward us, which would be running back behind the EMP, so that EMP would arrive first and then the warning would come from our satellite. So a solar EMP, you're just going to get hit without warning. With a man-made nuclear blast, they may give us a warning and say that you have, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or whatever, for whatever good it's going to do, because who's sitting right there ready to throw everything into a Faraday cage? The best idea would be to have it, the stuff that you're going to need, in the Faraday cage and always there, and then when you think you're out of danger for any more EMPs, take it out and use it and hope one doesn't surprise you.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thank you, John in Missouri. One question here. Real quickly, all of one mind, HARP can be used to create a hole in the ionosphere, which during a CME would devastate the exposed side of the planet. What saith the Deo? From Robert.
Well, you know, there are a number of HARP stations, and to get, you know, a hole over one area, you would have to be sure you coordinated several of the stations together. And now, since some of them are in Chinese and Russian hands, I don't know that you could count on a New World Order being organized enough at that point in time to be able to control all the stations uniformly as you wish. If you can't, there's going to be beat patterns set up between the various harp stations, which won't allow you to control where that hole appears. It might force it to appear over you, and you don't want to do that if you're these guys trying to do that. Mm-hmm. I really think that the ionospheric hole is going to be created when the Earth's magnetic field weakens and when the coronal mass ejections become more energetic. So I don't think that they're going to try to control that with HARP. There's just not enough energy in the system to respond quickly enough.
Okay, good answer. And then ask Stan, please, solar panels or generator from Jeff?
Jeff, solar panels are good. Generators are good as well. The problem is that some generators, the diodes may be fried if you haven't got them shielded with some, you know, a screen wire cage, which you can make. And not everything in the EMP radius of damage will get fried. There will be strange, you know, anomalous, you know, structures in the earth, minerals or buildings or whatever, and the wires don't go near you on the power lines or something. And there will be odd things that will survive a man-made EMP. With the solar EMP, your generator is probably going to get hit unless you've shielded it. And if you're using your solar panels, which I assume you would be, they can be damaged by high winds, like from these land decays, these derechos, or they can be damaged by the EMP pulse if they're out in the field. Hailstorm, they can be broken that way. So I would suggest that if you're going to use solar panels, that you build at least some of them on a portable rig that you can bring indoors when you have heard that there's high winds or storms coming. And certainly all the gear, like the inverters that you have to have with them to run stuff, I would have those shielded or at least a backup shielded. I know okay. It's expensive, but that's what you'd have to do.
All right, let's go to Mike in PA. Mike in PA, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Stan Dayo.
Hi, Stan. I have a question in reference to the animals and the crops. I do organic farming.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And just wondering how they might be affected by the EMP.
You know, I don't know. I'd never thought about that. The EMP is a short burst, and I think that basically the crops would be okay. I don't know if an EMP would, if you're right under the source of it, let's say a man-made one, it might mess with your nervous system, you know, your thinking and, you know, your brain. If you've got a pacemaker, it might not be too brilliant. That's all I can think of at the moment, but that's an interesting question. I've never thought about that.
Yeah, very good. Hey, thank you very much, Mike and PA. We'll give some thought to that. James in Texas, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, James.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Joyce.
Sure.
And thanks for the search for the truth. Isaiah 24 says, the earth is polluted. Man and his works will be burned. Remnant will be left. Back in March, you had a very credible guest, Dr. Sherry Rogers, and she said human-caused global warming is taking place, and all the good science points to it, and just wondered what Stan might have to say about that.
About what?
About human-caused global warming. We've got pollution. The Earth's atmosphere is as thick as a layer of shellac. If you're looking at a globe on a table, it'd be that thick. So we're polluting our water and our food. And doesn't it make sense that we would be polluting the atmosphere so bad that it would change our climate? And we're letting these global corporations off the hook by saying that they're not polluting.
Let's get a response from Stan then. All right, Stan?
Well, James, I agree that man-made industry and the way we treat the seas, dumping garbage and stuff like that, will contribute to the global warming or heating. But when you see other planets warming up or heating as well and nobody lives there, then you have to realize that the big villain in this case right now is the sun itself. So man-made pollution, man-made warming, if you wish, man-made heat input does happen, but it is not in my opinion, the major factor, the sun is.
Okay.
We're not helping it, and I don't want to let the corporations off the hook, but we've got a bigger disaster facing us regardless of the corporations and the pollution.
All right. One other question here, which is, how does Stan know the sun will erupt? How do they know that?
Well, I don't. The information I'm getting behind the scenes does indicate something is about to happen, but it is getting hotter. It is factually emitting ultraviolet spectra in two different spectra since 1992, and that's a fact. I even read a paper put out by the Solar Heliophysics Observatory in Arizona, and they sent me a hard copy of their data and reports and images they'd taken as well to prove that. It's getting worse now, and there's not a lot of public information being made available except for the fact that we're seeing more coronal mass ejections, more flares of what typically, let's say that it was an M2 class flare, it might have 1,000 times more gamma radiation released in it than it typically did before that time. Instead of being like an X1 or X2, which you'd expect to have that kind of radiation, the minor, you know, the M-class flares are putting out 1,000 times more radiation. So that is, you know, again, a matter of public record. So, yeah, it's getting warmer, and there's data there to prove that. You just have to get on the Internet and look at the various sites that provide it, like NOAA. And stuff like that.
Okay, let's go to Ann in Michigan. Ann, you're on with Stan Deo. Go ahead, please, Ann. Ann, are you there? All right, let's go to Fred. Fred, where are you?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Fred, you're on the Power Hour. Go ahead with Stan Deo.
Yeah, I just got a little tip. When I first heard about the North Pole moving around, I took a compass from a car, you know, that you used to be able to buy and mount on your dash and put that by my kitchen sink so I could monitor the change in the change in the degrees, and a lot of times the solar flares seem to affect that. Yep.
Interesting. We also have a question about that. Does the shift in magnetic north have an effect on the weather changes? Your response, Stan?
Yes, it will. The reason I say that is because the shift in the magnetic north also means that the earth current, or the what they call a telluric current, underneath the surface of the Earth, move thunderstorms in certain directions. They do affect them, and they do affect the jet stream, so yes.
All right, and Chris in Florida. Let's go to Chris in Florida. Thank you, Fred, for the phone call. Chris in Florida, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, Chris.
Good morning, Stan and Joyce and Josh. Stan, in what county in Colorado are you?
I'm in Pueblo County, around we're near the lake there, Lake Pueblo.
Great. Well, the reason I asked is I'd like to ask Joyce and you, Stan, and Josh, if you're in another area other than Joyce, would you consider starting a community currency, a usury-free local currency that isn't based on the Federal Reserve System, not like some of the private monetary systems out there? Because what we have with the Federal Reserve is being usury-based. Most people don't understand what usury is, and that is...
Yeah, but Chris, let me just add, you know, we're talking about earth changes right now, and I think a currency is maybe a little bit long-term from what we're talking about. I appreciate what you're saying, and I think it's probably very good.
It's like a barter system or a monetized time bank, and that way you could increase our survivability that way, since we're discussing how to trade with our neighbor.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree that it sounds like a very good idea. Stan, your response?
I think that would need organization, and I don't think we're going to have that time once we get into the chaos that we're talking about. I really think, Chris, that having barterable goods rather than some sort of a note will be much preferred over anything else, because people will not trust the note's value. They will trust the good. I really think we should look at doing that.
So, Stan, you're pretty convinced that there's something coming down the pike very shortly then. I mean, we've heard these stories. We've got prepare, get prepare. We've heard all this for a long time, but you're convinced, though, it's on the horizon.
I am, and at some other time we can talk again about the alien UFO wild card and all this.
Oh, I'm sorry, we didn't do that today. Yes, we will do that. Hey, thank you so much, Stan and Holly Deo. We love you guys so much, and thank you for all you do for the Power Hour and all of us. Thank you. You have a blessed day. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to be talking to Dr. Wallach. Watch the stock market. It's looking a little unstable. Gold seems to be going up. lot happening out there. You all have a blessed day. Thank you for joining the Power Hour. We love you all at the Power Hour. Y'all bless you all.
See you guys on Friday.
That's right. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a blessed day.